time for Mac Geek Gab, and listener Joe brings us our quick tip of the week. He says, I found this after being frustrated with not simply being able to paste in a phone number in the iPhone phone app in the keypad part. Normally, a data detector will detect a phone number and just offer to let me call, but that doesn't always work. What I found is that you can paste a phone number in, but it's hidden. When you have the dial pad screen up, you simply tap and hold above the keypad in that sort of white area where the phone number would appear eventually, and you will get a paste option. And then tap paste, and boom, your number appears, and then you can hit the little green button to make the call. More tips like this, plus your questions answered today on Mac Geek Gab 1062 for Monday, November 4th. Use your common sense day 2024. Folks, and welcome to Mac Geek Gab, the show where you send in tips like that. We share them. You send in cool stuff found. We share that. You send in questions. We share them. And we even try to answer them. And sometimes that becomes a conversation that lasts for multiple shows because we have a great family here and all of that good stuff. The goal with pulling all of these together for you is to ensure that each of us learns at least five new things every single time we get together. Our sponsors for this episode include coda.io/MGG. One doc to rule them all. You can bring all your text and tables together, and you can sign up at coda.io/MGG for free. We'll talk more about that in a little bit. For now, back here in Durham, New Hampshire, I'm Dave Hamilton.
And here in South Dakota, using my common sense, I'm Adam Christensen.
Yeah, when I saw that, on the list, I was like, well, this is, yeah, if only common sense were more common.
Right? Yeah. Like Brian said in the chat, common sense is not always common practice.
I like
that. Unfortunately.
Yeah.
I often wish people had a little bit more. And then that got me thinking, like, my parents used to say that to me when I was a kid, and I don't remember, I don't hear that as much anymore. It's like, use your common sense. You know, they would like.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that's just not a thing. Welcome to two older guys doing a podcast.
Right? I don't know. It was common. It was common in the vernacular when I was growing up. It's like, why don't you use your common sense?
It was. It's true.
Yeah, when I do something stupid.
Right, right. Yes, yes. This was not a phrase of endearment. Let's make this clear. No, no, no. No, that's right. Yeah. It's like, why didn't you use your common sense?
Yeah.
We are yet again missing Pilot Pete today. He's still out flying the plane. The police code for 1062 is subject possibly wanted. I would say it's subject absolutely wanted if we're talking
wanted
about
here,
Pete.
Yeah,
exactly. So I think
in a good way.
Right, in a good way. Yes, yeah. I think when it's a 1062, that's telling you that the person that you have in your custody is wanted for something else, I think is what the that implies. Yeah, not so good.
I think they land at Zoe occasionally and fill it back up with fuel. So, yes, it could be the same plane, but probably not the same fuel.
Yeah, we'll have to ask Pete if he's ever done mid-air refueling. I can only imagine how stressful that could be. And interesting, but maybe during his time in the Marines, perhaps. It's possible. In fact, probably likely. If you ever get to hang out with Pete, ask him about his time on aircraft carriers, flying the Harriers.
Ooh.
Yeah. Fun. Our giveaway here in November is with our friends at Otherworld Computing. And they are going to give away one of their new 1M2 SSD enclosures here. So go to MacGeekGab.com/giveaway, and you will be able to enter into that. I need to make the change here. So if you're listening to the live stream, you can enter. Sure, Adam. Sure. I'll make sure Sadie pulls your name separate from the list so that a listener actually gets it. But, you know, sure, you can enter. It doesn't mean you'll win. But all right. What else do we have here? Do we have
some tips? I bet.
Let's do some tips, shall we? Want to take us to Todd?
Oh, am I up?
Yeah, I think
I'm
so.
Not paying attention.
It's okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you would put your name on that one, so I figured maybe, you know.
This is the ellipses, right? He's for Pete, because Pete was talking about using ellipses and maybe overusing them, which is something that I'm probably also guilty of. But Todd says, for Pete, on the Mac or iOS, when you type three periods in a row, ... the OS converts them to an ellipses. So that would make it an easy way to type that. That's part of the default autocorrect. And I think I have seen that come up before. I can't remember last time we probably talked about on iOS, the press and hold. I think you press and hold on the period key and that will bring up the ellipses option. On the Mac, my favorite thing is I just learned the keyboard shortcut, which is option semicolon. So I use that all the time.
Yes, I like that. But yeah, it sometimes comes up automatically. I dug into this and I found that it worked in messages, notes. I guess it only worked for me on my Mac in messages. It did not work in notes nor mail. And also not in Slack or Thunderbird. On iOS, because of the way the keyboard works, it worked in all of those apps. Well, there's no Thunderbird for iOS that I know of. But yeah, it did not work in other Mac apps for me. But one could set up a text replacement, you know, in either Text Expander or in the keyboard, whatever they call that, the system settings. Is it still just system settings keyboard or is it buried one level deep? Is it system settings?
You're asking the hard questions.
It is just, it's on the top level. It's not buried.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you go into system settings keyboard text replacements, you could add one that is three dots replaced by the ellipses
actual
character, which is, as you pointed out, option semicolon. Yeah.
And also three dots is not an ellipses. So stop doing it. Sorry. Get on my high horse for a minute.
It would that be five spaces or a tab when you're indenting and coding, Adam? Well, while we're on the subject of what
always
is
tabs. Always tabs.
Are you an always tab? I guess I knew that about you.
Yeah.
All
tabs,
right.
Not spaces.
What's that?
Now the holy war starts in the chat.
That's right.
Tabs, not spaces.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and if we're going to have this holy war, we should talk about VI versus Emacs because that's the most important.
Yeah, see, Paul's yelling already.
Our Discord chat has immediately devolved into these holy wars, which I love. Lawyer Jeff. Says, I wanted to share a strange glitch I ran into after updating to macOS 15.1 on Monday, just in case anyone comes across anything similar. Right after the update, I noticed that my list of updates in the Mac App Store was showing 9 apps that supposedly needed updates, except they were apps I had already uninstalled. When I tried to click update on any of them, I got the error dialog saying that the update couldn't be completed. To fix it, I ran a command in Terminal to reset my launch services database, and we'll put the command in the show notes, but you could also do this with Onyx if you so desire. Launch services, he continues, handles app associations and other background info about installed applications. After that, I restarted the Mac, and the list in the Mac App Store cleared up. The 9 update entries for the uninstalled apps disappeared. Hopefully that's the end of it, he says, but let me know if you run into anything similar with macOS 15.1. I've been doing pretty well with 15.1. That's an interesting one and a great catch to fix that. Love the reset of launch services. But yeah,
I feel like I haven't had to do that in forever.
I know.
I don't have to do that.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's been a while since I've had to reset launch services. I'm surprised it wasn't maybe it was reset as part of the 15.1 update and it just didn't, I don't know, like
something happened. Yeah. Went wrong.
Yeah. But Like, if the app's not there, why would launch services catch it? That, like, that, that's what makes me think it wasn't fully, fully reset, but who knows? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. I do have an issue with the new Safari and, the dock apps. You know how starting last year, you can take a web page and save it as save to dock, I think is the command in Safari, right? You go to the file menu and choose add to dock. And then it saves it and acts like an application, which is
like a web app. Yeah.
Like a web app. Yeah. Which is awesome. I use it. We have our show notes doc, which if you're listening, you can follow along with us and you can even edit it. We trust you. It's at macgeekup.com/show notes and it's linked in the live chats and stuff. So you can see where we're going with things and, all of that. If you want to kind of watch even more about how the sausage is made, in macOS 14, it works the way I want it to work. And how I'll articulate that is by describing what now happens in macOS 15, which I have not yet updated to here in the studio, mainly because audio devices, but also this. So I have a separate web app for each of the three podcasts that I do for the same agenda document, you know, get one for this, obviously one for Gig Gab, one for Business Brain. I noticed, and I have the same down in my office because I pull them up when I'm doing show prep and things like that. It just makes life easier and have them on my laptop too. I noticed as soon as I moved to macOS 15 on my laptop and on my computer down in the office, anytime I click a link to open a Google Doc, like if I get an email, if you were to send me an email, Adam, linking to a Google Doc that we needed to, like, you know, some spreadsheet I needed to fill out for a proposal or whatever, it will open in one of those web apps now. It treats that app as the way all Google Docs will open, not just that one Google Doc. And so I dug into this. I posted about it in our Discord, and one of our listeners pointed to an Apple developer support article about how that is the default behavior now, but you can set a scope for it. And if you go into, like, if you open up the package of that web app, you can see in there, there's a scope. And so I changed the scope to not just be, you know, whatever, drive.google.com or whatever it is. I changed it to be that specific URL. So, okay, great. And then the app wouldn't launch, presumably because I changed something about it and the security checksum, whatever it is they're doing, the hash, the CRC, who knows, went, this is different from what it was saved as.
And when you saved it, yeah.
Yeah, what's supposed to happen is web developers are supposed to put that scope in their, in the web page or something, so that it then gets carried down. And when Safari makes one of those web apps, it puts it there or something. I don't know, but I was not.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah, but now I have to petition Google to change for, wait a minute.
Yep.
Could I redirect Google, whatever that is, you know, drive.google.com. If I went into my /Etsy/hosts file and
I don't think you
set drive.google. No, just temporarily set it so that I could load a local file with that web page that has all of the stuff that I want on it, and then save that as a web app, and then go back and remove that from my Etsy hosts. And now, I don't know.
I mean, how is the scope added to the page? Is it just like a HTML tag, like a regular tag?
I think so.
When you first load the doc before you save it as an app, could you just edit the source and, you know, locally, and then save it?
Oh, edit the source, like, in the page, like in the web inspector.
Web inspector, just add it, and then I would try that.
Yeah, you're so much smarter than me. That makes perfect sense. I like this.
I don't know if it'll work, but...
Well, but it's a better idea than my crazy...
I mean, you might have to do the whole, like, fake it till you make it. Like, let it think that you're drive.google.com. But hopefully, if it's just a simple tag that developers are supposed to add, like a meta tag or whatever. I don't know how it's done, but
yeah. Yeah. It says, Sequoia adds support for opening links directly in web apps. Now, if a user clicks a link, if it matches the scope, it opens there. By default, this behavior applies when the link matches the host of the web page. As a developer, you can refine this experience by defining the range of URLs that should open in the web app with the scope member in the web app manifest.
Oh, you had to put a web app manifest file. That's like a, I think it's a side like JSON file.
It is.
For web apps.
That's what it is. Yeah.
I've never messed with that too much. Ugh. Oh, yeah. It's always great when they add more work for us developers.
Yep.
Love it.
Yep. Yep. So I'm loving this.
Was that, so is that manifest file not come down when you, is that what you're editing when you're going into the
yes.
package?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. And it doesn't like it. It doesn't, it won't launch. Now, the other thing is maybe I need to just look at the security things and find how to like force that. Cause I can go in and edit it. But then, like I said, the app just is like, no, this is damaged. It's like, no, it's not. It's fixed.
What a super nerdy rabbit hole we just went down.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. Uh-huh. I will put a link to the, Discord chat that we have about going about this in the show notes so that if you want to get in on this conversation, you are more than welcome to, but yeah, I think that's
better. Would it have killed them to just have put a like setting in Safari that you could just flip to change the default behavior back?
Like, or in the web app. Like, why not have a settings? And they do have a settings icon in the web app, but like, why can't I change it there? Just like only open this? Like, I don't care what Google wants me to do. This is my web app, Apple. Like, can I can I use my computer for a little bit? Right. Like, it's to the point where I don't have any Google Docs web apps. I had to delete the ones from my computer in the office. Well, they're functionally useless to me now.
No, yeah, totally.
Stupid. Anyway. sorry about that.
Maybe Alex has something to take us away from this.
That wouldn't be a bad thing, would it? Alex says, I know I'm going to find it here. Hello, dear MGG. He calls us back to episode 354. He says, what I'm about to talk about was introduced in macOS Lion many years ago and was highlighted in episode 354, 13 years ago. He says, but I wasn't a listener then. That's probably true for many of you, and that's okay. he says, I wasn't even an Apple user then, so maybe it's worth resurfacing. He says, using Pages and Numbers for several years, this is a discovery for me. Apple's Office Suite has a very nice and powerful versioning feature, not to be confused with track changes. That's different. If you go in Pages or Numbers and possibly Keynote, he didn't say Keynote, and I'm not testing it here, but certainly worth looking. Go to the File menu for any document you have open, choose Revert to, and choose Browse All Versions. That will give you a list of all of the versions of that document that Pages has. He says it's supported in the iWork suite preview and text edit. And there is even a support article about it. So, view and restore past versions of documents on the Mac. Love this.
Said this is different than what?
Then track changes, which is the thing if you and I are editing a document that we're passing back and forth, you can like, you know, if we're redlining something is the term.
No, I think the versioning thing relies on Time Machine. So I think you have to have, if I'm remembering right, you have to have Time Machine active, right? Because I think that's where it keeps those versions. This was introduced way back when.
I The support article that
Does
I have here.
Meeting time
no, it says
anymore?
Many apps automatically save versions of documents as you work on them. At any time, you can browse through document versions and go back to an older version. You can also explicitly save a version. So and then it continues. Actually, it says a version is saved automatically every hour or more frequently when you're making many changes. A version is also saved when you open, save, duplicate, lock, rename, or revert a document. So, no, I don't.
So they're just doing some sort of Git thing under the hood, I guess.
Yeah.
Where are they saving all this? I mean, it would just be the changes, so it wouldn't be like huge amounts of storage. But
that was Alex's sort of follow-up question. he says, in episode 601... This is still blowing my mind that somebody knows these episode numbers. You're amazing, Alex. You shared a story with a warning that this feature might wind up occupying a lot of space eventually, and that the versions folder and we shared the versions folder in that episode to evaluate the size occupied. But that's for the versions of files that are stored at a local drive. What about iCloud versions, like of a Pages document? Could you, by any chance, help to answer the question? Is there a possibility to see the amount of space occupied in my iCloud with versions? I think you'd have to look at the local files and see them there would be. But I don't know. I leave that as a geek challenge. If somebody does know, feedback at Mackie.
Yeah. Again, I wouldn't. This is another one of those things where it's just like I wouldn't worry about it too much because, again, like it's not saving the entire, you know, it's like not like at point in time saving the entire document. It's literally just saving the little changes that you've made to that document. So like it's the amount of storage the stuff eats up is just minor compared to, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Fair.
All right. Well, Jose has a tip for us. He says, I previously sent a tip about how I use Spotlight on my iPhone to quickly jot some text down and how I take a screenshot, which I review and sort at the end of my day. I found this to be quicker than opening the Reminders app or the Notes app, then tapping on the field to make it active, then finally typing the text I want. Well, I no longer have to take the screenshot because I recently discovered that if I can drag text from the Spotlight field and drop it into Reminders or Notes and even into Safari. You just have to double tap or triple tap to highlight the text, tap and hold to drag the text to the desired app, hover until that app opens, and let go. I don't know when this functionality was added, but it works in iOS 18.1. Also, if the app you want to drop the text into is on a different page, you swipe to that page using another finger while holding onto the text. Tip within a tip, to highlight a single word, you double tap. To highlight a paragraph, you triple tap. Not sure if anyone would find this useful since there is probably a shortcut that does a version of this. And of course, there's Quick Notes, but that is only for the Notes app, of course.
I'm just processing. There's a lot of tips in there. I had forgotten about the triple tap to select a whole paragraph.
Yeah, I use that all the time. I use both of those all the time.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Huh, interesting. Yeah, I did not know. I didn't know about the drag to from Spotlight to do your thing. Like, it makes sense. Why not? It's text, so yeah. Huh. Yeah. Yeah. And then the multi-finger like swiping and you know, you're holding the text with one finger and swiping with the other finger, you know, yay, multi-touch. But
I wish Apple would have adopted at one point the little trick that was in, and I know there's third-party apps that'll do this, the little trick that used to be in the, like, I think it was native to the Newton or whatever, where you could, like, grab some text and drag it to the side and sort of dock there. And then you could just navigate around normally. And then you could like pull it back out and then drop it wherever you wanted.
Yes. Yeah. We did that giveaway in October with Eternal Storms. And one of the things they gave away is Yoink, which I believe is part of setup. Don't quote me on that. You will quote me. I just quoted myself on that.
I don't know. No, I don't know if it is per setup. No.
But Yoink is... I like now that I have Yoink on my Mac, it needs to be on all of my Macs because it does exactly what you described. You just take something and dock it temporarily and then, you know, bring it back in whenever you want it. It's way simpler. So.
Yeah.
Yep.
Zoe said she needs a tip to remember all the tips.
Oh, yeah. Well, wait, that means that what we need to start doing when we craft the agenda is organize the tips into mnemonics so that we can come up with a phrase that the first letter of each tip spells so that we can remember all the tips.
No, I felt like I see it building a searchable database in my future.
Oh, that's even better. That's a much better idea.
Or browsable and searchable.
Browsable and searchable, yeah. I mean, we sort of have that with like the search on Mac Geekab, but here's the thing. I know that we just haven't done this. We could feed all of the audio and web pages into an LLM and just have it be our engine for
us. We have that on our corporate website. They added it. I forget which tool they used, but yeah, we now have a AI little bot, and basically they just fed all of the documents and website data into it, and it now answers questions.
Yeah. Yeah. We're doing that with one of my other companies, and it's like, it's been amazing. It's crazy. It's crazy.
So you could just be like, can you tell me about that tip that was sort of about this? And it would be like, bloop, here you go.
Of course. Yeah.
From this episode.
And then, yeah.
Yeah.
That would actually, for what we do here, that would be super handy. So, yeah. And I know OpenAI has APIs that you can just feed that into so that you get the user experience that you want with the engine that you want. So, yeah.
I'll have to find out what we're using. Maybe we can, I don't know how much it costs, but.
Yeah. It usually, the cost of it is, for what we would want to do, would probably be negligible, I would think.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. I was doing, I spent some time, I went to PepCom, last week on October 30th. And so I took the train down and back, the Amtrak. And Amtrak's Wi-Fi has gotten much better over the last year. I was on both the Northeast Regional and the Acela, and not at the same time, obviously. But Wi-Fi was much better than I remembered. I was able to be extremely functional and productive during the train rides, which was kind of my point of taking the train as opposed to driving. I noticed, you know, they have it, the name of the Amtrak Wi-Fi remains the same. And I was on four different trains, a train from New Hampshire to Boston, and then Boston to New York, and then the same two in reverse. And I was like, oh, I don't want my IP address rotating, because I want to just be able to say accept to the, you know, terms once and then just have it sort of float with me from train to train without having to worry about it. So I went into system settings, network, and turned, looked at private Wi-Fi addresses. And I saw that there are three options now. One is off, and that turns this feature off. And what this feature does is it invents, and that's probably the wrong word, but it creates a MAC address for your Wi-Fi connection that is not yours. And it's intended, I mean, when you have this off, people can track your device and it create a fingerprint of you wherever you go. When you turn this feature on, it obscures that. So that's the reason for this. But there are three options, off being one of them, the other two being fixed and rotating. And mine was set to rotating. And I thought, well, I don't want it to be rotating because I just want, when I connect to Amtrak Wi-Fi, I want it to give the same MAC address for the entirety of this trip. And so I set it to fixed. And then I thought, well, wait a minute. I just made an assumption about things. Let me actually learn what these do. So off is obvious. It's just off. Fixed, it comes up with one and keeps it for that Wi-Fi network no matter what. It for eternity. Rotating, Apple says, when set to rotating, your device uses a private address that rotates to a different private address every 2 weeks. Ah, your device chooses rotating by default when joining a new network that uses weak security or no security, like an open network on the train. So I set it back to rotating because 2 weeks is plenty. And I love that they chose 2 weeks because it means that when you're at your hotel, your MAC address likely doesn't change unless you're staying there for more than 2 weeks and all of that stuff. So this idea of the rotating address, I love. I just assumed it was rotating every time, you know, every time I reconnected, it would come up with a new one. No, obviously not. You want to kind of, you want to be remembered for a little while, just not for all the while. So I wanted to share that. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. Yeah. We learn too.
Absolutely. Well, and you know, like obviously doing the show, we get to learn too. I always think I get to learn the most, but one other byproduct, one of the many wonderful byproducts of doing this show is it always keeps me questioning my assumptions. Like in this case, like it's just part of the mindset of, well, is that true or is it not? Like, I don't need to go with my gut on this. I'm sure someone will tell me. And sure enough, Apple has a support article that told me. It's like, great. Now I know. Amazing. So
very cool.
Yep. Fantastic. All right. Yep.
John's got our, I think this will wrap us up. I think.
Okay.
Maybe there'll be bonus ones that we come up with. And this is for those of us with the new iPhones with the camera button. So if you have a new iPhone with a camera button, he says, I set that camera button to take a double press to activate. This is so you don't accidentally activate it. I've actually been struggling with this. I accidentally hit it quite frequently. I found that I would, you know, activate it when I didn't mean to. Me too. And that has fixed the problem. So like, that's a simple solution. If you want to do this, you go into settings, camera, and then camera control. And there's a bunch of options there. So I guess this is the other tip. I might actually just change mine from the camera, because I'm kind of okay just, you know, doing the camera controls the old way from the home screen. Or the lock screen. I just noticed I can change it, and I knew you could change it to any third party app. So if you have a third party camera app you prefer to use versus Apple's, which is really nice, you can change it to that. So like, I have Halide as an option. But I also noticed in here is code scanner for scanning QR codes.
Oh. Huh.
Yeah.
That might be a better use of that button.
Maybe.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting.
I don't know. I might have to play with it, but I like the double click thing, because then that avoids, you know, accidental pressing.
Yeah. Huh. Huh. I wonder, I have not experienced this issue with accidental pressing, but I use a case and you don't, Adam. So I'm curious if listener John, where he falls in that. Yeah. Yeah,
that would help, because you got that deeper click. Yeah, no, mine is I'll grab it at the wrong, you know, and Steve would say I was holding it wrong. The other thing that I've struggled with this one a little bit more is my muscle memory for the volume. I tend to go now to the action button when I'm trying to put the volume up and down first. Like if I'm trying to go up, I have to go, it's like lower or something. I don't know. Somehow I hit it.
Well, you're used to hitting the topmost button for the volume, and now the topmost button on that side is the action button. So it makes perfect sense. Yeah.
So I'm learning, but
yeah, we'll get there. All right, folks. You ever feel like managing projects is like juggling flaming torches while balancing on a tightrope? Well, don't get caught in that chaos. Use our sponsor, Coda. We started using Coda with one of my other businesses, and it has been a total game changer. Coda brings documents, spreadsheets, and apps all into one platform, kind of like a productivity Swiss Army knife. If that knife could also, you know, make coffee, organize your team, and write your emails, maybe not the coffee thing, but the rest, like, yeah. We use Coda to keep our team in sync, managing everything from planning cycles to OKRs, all in one place. And with Coda's templates from their gallery, you've got a treasure chest of ideas at your fingertips, minus, you know, the eye patch. Candidly, Coda's helped us stay so organized that sometimes I think it's secretly planning our next move. Don't get caught in the old school shuffle. Check out Coda. Coda empowers your startup to strategize, plan, and tracks goals effectively. Take advantage of this limited time offer just for startups. Go to coda.io/MGG today and get 6 free months of the team plan. That's coda.io/MGG to get started for free and get 6 free months of the team plan. coda.io/MGG. And our thanks to Coda for sponsoring this episode. All right, Adam.
Woo.
Yeah. I mentioned making coffee there. What, how is your coffee still warm?
Yes, it is, because I got it finally fixed. Yeah. I had a good lesson in, you know, why maybe everything doesn't need to be connected to the internet. And actually I believe this about this product, right? But I have an Ember mug, which is great, right? It allows you to set a temperature and you say, I want my beverage to maintain this temperature, and it does it, right? It's like keeps your coffee warm, because I'm kind of a slow coffee drinker and I don't like cold coffee. The problem is it's an IoT device and it requires an app. And I have no idea why it requires an app, because it could have a little dial on it with a display that lets you set the temperature and you could just physically lock it in. But this is the way it works. Well, today I went, you know, and I've been using it for a while and I really do like it overall. It's got a lot of great features. I wish the battery lasted a little longer, but I think it keeps it warm for about 2 hours or so. I have version one. There's a new version that might last longer, but, and then you just set it on a little, charging thing. And that's the other thing, is I've had to replace my little charging coaster a couple times, because the buttons, it's got physical connection to a copper ring on the bottom, so it gets crusty. I don't know, again, why they can't do a wireless. Maybe it's because it's still a ceramic. It's got a ceramic coating on it, at least. Yeah. So maybe it doesn't work. I don't know. Anyway, I digress. But what happened this morning was I went to go set it, and I launched the app, because it normally happens automatically, but every once in a while I do have to relaunch the app and kind of reconnect or whatever. So I went to set the temperature, and it popped up and it said, hey, we've got a brand new app for you. Congratulations. This is going to be amazing. But you have to re-sign up for your account. So I don't know if they got purchased by somebody or just they move their website. I haven't done any background research, but for whatever reason, they're like, you have to create a new account. I'm like, oh, great.
Yeah, great.
And I had originally created the account with login with Apple. And so it brought up a new screen to create the account, and it had the options. Do you want to, you know, sign up for an account with email or Google or sign in with Apple? And I'm like, oh, I want sign in with Apple. I tapped it. The thing came up. It said, do you want to use your Apple account? And I didn't really think much of it. And I said, yes, I want to use my Apple account. Hit the button. It did the whole Face ID thing. And then it went right back to the login screen. And I went,
huh?
Okay. I did it again. And the same action happened again. And then I was like, oh, I know what's going on. I had signed up with sign in with Apple for my old account. So it's trying to log into the old account, not sign up for a new account. Or this was my theory. And then I realized, I don't know how to get rid of my login with Apple account. Like, I don't know how to tell it I don't want to use this login with Apple account anymore.
Right.
Yeah. So I had to figure out that. So there's a little tip in here. So if you do need to do that, all you have to do is you go into settings, you tap on your, you know, like iCloud account or whatever, the thing at the top. Is there an official name for that, by the way?
It's your picture. No, I don't. I'm sure there is an official name for it. I don't know what that name is. Yeah.
Yeah. Your account at the top of your iPhone or whatever. And then there is a sign in with Apple there. And that will show all the sign in with Apple accounts that you have. And then you can tap on them and you can remove one. Really? Be careful with this, obviously, because if you remove it, you're not going to be able to log into your whatever account I don't know if you can restore them. I haven't done any research on that. But anyway, I removed the account. And then it gets really fun. So then I went back to the app and I was logged in.
What?
Yeah. So it had logged in the background. So I think what happened was when I hit sign in with Apple, it was just going really, really slow. So I don't know if my theory is maybe this is the morning that they activated this feature and everybody's like trying to get their coffee going in the morning and maybe the server's overloaded going really, really slow. So I think it actually had either logged me into my old account on the new system, like created it and logged me in or what. It all happened in the background. But now I'm like, well, now I just told Apple I don't want to use the account. So now what do I do?
Huh.
And so I ended up having to delete the app and start the process all over and then waited for it to create the account, which took about a minute and a half, which was really weird. But it finally did it. And then I finally got my coffee reset up. But I had to rename my coffee mug and like all this. It was not a great morning and probably not a great time to do it first thing in the morning when people are trying to get their coffee warm. But it was a whole experience.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But I learned a few things. Yeah. So, hey, it's all good.
I had no idea about that list of sign in with Apple accounts. That's super handy. I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm assuming it's on the Mac too. I mean, but I didn't look, but I would assume it's on the Mac as well.
We should never assume.
In the same area.
But let's look. Yeah.
It's also on the Mac.
Yeah. Yeah. Wait, is it? Oh, yeah. Yes, it is. It is. I see. You gotta dig one layer there. Okay. Yep.
And then what's nice there too is you can see your hide my email like email. So I would imagine that would come in handy if I guess you'd never really have to reset anything like in terms of like reset password because you don't technically have a password. You just have your
hide my email
face
thing. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Interesting. Huh.
Oh, and I just saw a thing at the top of mine and now says share your accounts. Your sign in with Apple accounts can be shared with your family members and close friends using the password app.
Oh, yeah, of course. Later. I mean, it's just a login like any other and you can share all of those. So, yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Cool. Fun. Yeah, you like that. Yeah, I looked the Ember mug does the new one. It seems to be about the same. They say an hour and a half for the 10 ounce and 80 minutes or something for the 14 ounce. So. Yeah, it's still.
Yeah, I wish it was a little bit longer, but I understand you don't want a huge battery in there, I guess. So, and, you know, I'm mostly near the coaster. So for a while I did have two. I had one in the office and one in the house. That made it a little bit easier, but they kept breaking. Like I said, these little pins, they get crud in them and then they get stuck down and then they don't work and you can't really clean them out. I don't know. I'm on my third.
Hot soapy water doesn't fix it.
Yeah. I don't know if I want to do that.
No, don't wash your electronics in hot soapy water. that was a joke. All right. Let's see. We have some questions. Before we do the questions, I want to take a minute and thank everyone whose premium contributions have come in the last couple of weeks, because it's been a couple of weeks since we've thanked you folks. And of course, you can always learn about this at macgeekup.com/premium. That is optional and very much appreciated and really is a part of the kind of the revenue stack that allows us to keep doing the show. So thanking for $50 contributions, thanking Joe from Aventura, Patrick from Little Rock, Edward from Manhattan Beach, Peter from Ridgefield, and Richard from Salem. $35 contributions, thanks to Paul in Danville and Anders in Vosteras. $30 contributions, thanks to Barbara in Hanahan and Seth in Tucson. And then a long list of $25 contributions from thanking Robin in Andover, Doug in Centerville, Jane's in Charlotte, Thomas in Chicago, Jean in Denver. Oh, I scrolled too fast. Keith in Edmonds, Donald in Jamaica Plain, Brian in Johnson City, Charles in Kobe, Gary in McKees Rocks, Chuck in Mechanicsburg, Chris in Nailsworth, George in Natick, Scott in North Little Rock, Robert in Pontesbury, Peter in Rochester, Steve in Santa Fe, James in Scoresby, Laura in Spokane Valley, Michael in Wake Forest, Jürgen in Valderstadt, Robert in Westford, and then Andy and Ken, both from Parts Unknown, because they have had their premium accounts for far longer than we needed to start knowing your address. Thanks to Bob and Lepesh for $15 and then $10 contributions. Thanks to James in Amity Harbor, Bill in somewhere Parts Unknown, Gary in Babylon, Scott in Bourbonnais, Jeff in Chesterton, Chris in Chorleywood, Mark in Coopersburg, Stephen in Costa Mesa, Barry in Des Plaines, Kevin in Edisonville, Paul in Lawrenceville. Wait, Kevin in Edison, Paul in Lawrenceville, Joseph in Marietta, James in Melbourne, Santiago in Palm City, Stephen in Plainfield, Jonathan in Plainsboro, Michael in Robbins, Abel in Santa Rosa, Phil in Summers, Brian in Southbury, John in Vienna, Frank in Voorhees, John in Wake Forest, Neil in West Hartford, and Timothy in West Windsor. Thank you, all of you. You rock. Cheers, indeed. All right. Let's do some questions. I have Apple did Alrighty. Some announcing this week, by the yes. way. Apple's had a whole week of releases, it turns out. And we're recording this on Friday. I am not sure if there has been an announcement for Friday, November 1st. We are not seeing it as we're recording this. But the fourth quarter results were Thursday. Prior to that were M4 MacBook Pros, the M4 Pro and M4 Max chips in the lots of things, including those. The new Mac Mini and the new M4 iMac as well. So it's been and the hearing stuff is coming to AirPods Pro Gen 2 as well.
Yeah, just lots of new things. And the lots big focus things. Was also Apple Intelligence. And the only other thing I'll mention on this, we don't need to spend a lot of time on it, is I found it interesting that, you know, this rollout. So they did individual videos throughout the week, I think, for each little announcement. So it was sort of the Apple style announcement where they're flying through Apple Park and doing all the things and having people talk about all the features. So you can check all those out. But it was like this weekly, all week rollout where each day or a couple days you got an announcement. And so it was a mini, kind of little mini keynotes.
Oh, Yeah. I like it. Joe has a question about the new Mac Mini. He says, I've ordered the new M4 Pro version of the Mac Mini with 24 gigs of RAM and a 2 terabyte SSD. Delivery is supposed to be November 8th, perhaps sooner. I have a question. He says, I'd sort of like to do a relatively new install, but with the APFS split volume approach that's been there for a while, is there any reason to do this? The system will be new, but it will be on its own volume. And seemingly all I have to do is then copy over my data. And am I good to go? Not sure how app registrations and such might go through. I haven't done an upgrade to my existing Mac since APFS came out, so I'm a little fuzzy as to the best approach. I can reinstall the apps and such, but not really sure if there is a need with how things work now. What would your advice be upgrading from my 2017 MacBook Pro to this new M4 Mac Mini? Adam, if you were in that position, what would you do?
Reiterate that. What is the core question here?
The question is, he's got this new M4 Mini coming. He's got a 2017 MacBook Pro that he's migrating from or will be kind of moving from this to.
Yep.
What migration path should he take to get his data and apps and all that stuff on the new one? Which one would you take?
Yeah, I just would do kind of the standard thing. You know, I've gone over the network. I mean, is the question about the physicality of it or just the...
I think the question is, do we start process? Fresh? Like, yeah, start fresh or use Migration Assistant or...
No, I would just use Migration Assistant in whatever way, shape, or form. You know, and depending upon how fast you want it to go, right? You have the options, but I just generally just do the default, which I think is just over the network, your local network these days, right?
Yep.
So, yeah. Simple, straightforward. Is the concern just the age, the gap, it sounds like?
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. He said, without giving much context, that he'd sort of like to do a relatively new install, but isn't sure if that's necessary. So I understand being on the fence about that. The idea of a nuke and pave every now and again is attractive. But I think Migration Assistant has gotten to the point where it's not as necessary as it used to be.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's a lot of, like, cruft that could be in there. You know, one of the things that if you're really concerned about the cruft and stuff like that, I think the approach I've taken more these days is to spend a little extra time with your existing system and doing some pre-migration cleanup. So like, if you know there's like, oh, I've got all these apps that I don't use anymore, right? Run those through Clean My Mac and like just get them out of there ahead of time. Or if you know there's like maybe old preferences and data and stuff like that that you don't want or need, like clean that out. I feel like that's better time spent than the amount of time you would spend like doing the nuke and pave thing and then having to like re-add everything from scratch. Like if you're willing to go through that, that's great, you know, like, but, and maybe you need that. I guess it really depends on what place you're in, but I've gotten more and more to the position of like, if I'm not having issues with my existing system, then really what you're talking about is you're wanting to like maybe clean up old garbage. So just do the house cleaning first, like do your spring cleaning first and then migrate. Right.
Huh. I'm processing this. I like this approach. I might add one step to that. Before I decommission a machine, if I've migrated from one to the other, I trust Migration Assistant, but you know, we live in a world where we don't have to, and it could possibly miss something, right? We don't get a manifest of what it's gonna go, right? So before I decommission a computer, I often will save an image of the hard drive to what I consider like cold storage, like off to my NAS or something, just in case, so that, you know, 6 months from now, it's like, wait, where is that file? Uh-oh. And then I can go back and, you know, hopefully find it.
Yeah.
So
I guess I have all those backups that I do.
Right.
You know. And we've talked about these things. Like I use ChronoSync on my critical folders with a one-way like sync where it doesn't sync deletions. And I use Backblaze, which has versions that go way, way back. I have, you know, Time Machine and all these other things. I do, after I migrate, tend to not immediately reconnect every backup system. I'll usually like leave a clone backup off for a few weeks or a month or so and just rely on, I mean, I have enough other backup, like I said, like online backup, I have iCloud, I have all these other things. So I feel like generally safe in doing that. And then that's kind of my, oh my gosh, where is this thing? You know, I have my, like, I'll usually pick my Carbon Copy Cloner backup is usually the one that I'm like, okay, that's the last, that's this, this computer in the state the day I migrated. Right.
Right.
And then,
yeah, it's because it's
feel safe. I can like clean off the old computer. And
so I would
still have that backup.
If you're going
with you on the image.
If you're going to do the image path, I would do that before I started my cleanup operation. Right. And then that way, you know, if I over zealously cleaned, okay, fine. Like it's all over there. But otherwise, I kind of like that idea. I have wound up doing nuke and paves in the not too distant past, and they generally go much faster than I expect them to, because so much of our stuff is synced. And so, you know, email and my documents, once I install the right apps or, you know, configure things, it just all sort of appears, right? Like it's installing apps and, you know, how many apps do we each use? More than you think. Way more than you think. But, you know, it's gone okay. So I think it's within the last year and a half, I've done some nuke and paves. It's been okay. But usually the day I get a new computer is not necessarily the day that I have time or the week or the month that I have time to do all of that nuking and paving. So I like your idea of, yeah, spend a little time doing some spring cleaning and then off you go.
I mean, he has a week. He has till November 8th. He doesn't even have to do it all in one day.
That's
like
fair.
The computer doesn't show up for a week.
Right.
You could start this process now while you wait.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting.
The other thing that I will say about the nuke and pave thing is, I mean, I have gotten caught with that because I'm reinstalling apps and there's some apps that I only use quarterly or once a year. And it's like, I go to do that thing and it's like, well, where's this app? Oh, where's the data for this app? Like,
right.
Oh no.
Oh no. Yep. 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 You know,
so.
Yep. Yep.
Because if you just do a nuke and pave, you're probably not going through your applications folder, like checking all the apps. That's the other nice thing about the pre-cleanup is you can actually like, oh yeah, there's that app. I don't use it hardly ever, but I do use it.
Right.
Right. I mean, I'm old. My memory's gotten bad. I forget about things like
that. Well, and we also have these devices that are perfect. And I say perfect replacements for our memory. Our memory is fallible, right? These devices, when used properly, have an infallible memory. So why would we want to even try to remember stuff when the device can just be that? So, yeah.
Yep.
All right. Eduardo has a question also relates to Apple's week of announcements. He says, today I'm living with a 16-inch M1 MacBook Pro and a studio display. I'm happy with this setup, but I want to add a new extra monitor. And I also want to add a headless Mac to take on my automations and act as like a Plex server, a backups for me and my wife and everything else that I can think of throwing at it. Cool. The thing to think about is, am I better off buying a studio display and a Mac Mini M4 or an iMac M4? What are your ideas? The cost difference is about the same, or isn't too big, he says. The main goal is to have a machine that will last a long time. So, and he says he's been listening since 2011, which is amazing. Thanks, Eduardo. That's fantastic. Love that.
So there's not that big of a cost difference in with how he's specking things out. He's
correct.
Saying.
Yep.
It's a tough one. I think I would, and this may be my old 80s component stereo days coming back to me, but like, I think I would go the studio display Mac Mini route because now those things are independent and you can upgrade and swap them out and deal with them as separate pieces of technology. I love the form factor of the iMac. I think it's gorgeous, but I feel like more and more these days, like having that option to like swap things out, swap things around. He mentions he has a Mac Studio already, right? I think he said. So it feels like that would be the better way to go if the price is not dramatically different. And the fact that Apple doesn't let you use an old iMac as a display just still irks me.
I was all in on the iMac train, right? I had an iMac in my office. I had an iMac up here in the studio and they had replaced iMacs before them. Like I was all in 27 inches of 5K goodness, right? You bought the display and you got a free computer attached to the back of it, right? And I loved that. When my iMac unceremoniously just stopped working, the display actually is what broke on the iMac that I had here in the studio, the 2019 27 inch Core i9. It was doing great. And then suddenly the lightning that hit way too close to the house decided not to let that display work anymore. And I moved to a Mac Studio at that point with a separate display. I've got the Philips 27-inch display. I already had moved in the office. I wound up having a deal where somebody traded me a domain. I had a domain name, and they had a M1 fully decked out Mac Mini, and they offered a trade. And I said, sure. The $8 domain that I bought that I'm not going to use paid off. Woo! You know. So I moved in the office too, and now I'm completely detached from any iMac dependence, and it's wonderful. I mean, I still have two iMacs sitting on the floor of my office because it kills me that you know, one of them is a fine server computer whose display doesn't work, and the other is a fine display whose computer is, you know, too old to be functional. Right. And I just need to let go of that and throw the dispose of them appropriately, whatever that path is. But it irks me that I have, like, that these things aren't separate. And so I am off of the iMac train now. And Apple, if Apple had continued to offer a 27-inch iMac, that's what I would have bought in the studio to replace the iMac that was here. But they don't. And I am convinced, and I might be wrong about this, but I am convinced that for myself, the 24-inch screen would be too small. I have three screens here in the studio, although one of them just sits behind me with our logo on it when we do the show. But I'm very happy with the component stereo model again for a desktop computer.
Yeah, and the only last thing I want to say on this is I feel like we as a community, especially since Apple is always on about their environmental initiatives, we should be way more critical of them not making that a feature of the iMac, where an old iMac can be used as a display, because they have a long, useful life. They wouldn't have to be in landfills and junked or recycled or whatever you do with them when they get old. If Apple would just, I mean, I can't imagine that there's any massive technical limitation or cost to allowing that to happen.
It's fair. And as Paul Conaway in the chat pointed out, Luna display from AstroPad will turn I think you can turn an iMac. It showed up with the iPad one.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's imperfect, but
correct.
It does work.
Like, yep. Let me plug in the Thunderbolt cable and make it a Thunderbolt display. Like, it can happen. It can be a thing. It can be a physical connection without latency. That's amazing. They're gorgeous. Like you said, they're high quality, gorgeous displays, and they're just being wasted.
Yeah.
Literally wasted when someone replaces it.
Yeah.
And it does not fit with their environmental statements. Like, it's in my opinion, direct contradiction to that.
You're not wrong. I hadn't thought about it in those terms, but yeah, you're not wrong. Huh. Well, I am free from mostly free. I say that I'm free from it. And in the same breath, I say that I have two iMacs sitting on my floor that I'm trying to figure out what to do with. And I just
landfill them. Great.
I know, but like, I know.
Like, that you're proving my point.
I am
like,
proving your point.
If one of those could be used as a display, the one that still is working, you would use it as a display. I'm sure you would find a place to use it as a display.
100%.
Or give it to somebody who needs it.
Right. Yes. It would wind up having some utility. I wonder. All right. Yeah. You got me thinking though.
Okay. I think somebody made a Kickstarter hack where you can but you have to go in and solder stuff. Like, it's not simple, but you can
do it.
So I know it can be done technically.
Yeah.
Come on, Apple.
I gotta dig into the Luna thing, because I feel like that might, like, for some purposes here, I might get some great utility out of that. All right. Let's see. Let's answer. Terry's question was sort of, in fact, kind of perfect. So let's do Terry. And then I've got some cool stuff found that I saw at Pepcom too.
Okay. Yeah. Terry says, where has all my free space gone?
Are you gonna sing?
I'm not going to jump into the song.
You know, you're not going to sing for us?
Where has all my free space gone? Long time missing. Where has all my free space gone? Can't store any stuff.
All right, anyway. you and James Dempsey need to collaborate here, I think.
We're probably going to get a copyright strike.
Oh, that's true. Maybe. Yeah. Facebook and YouTube are going to yell at us now.
He says, I have an iMac that has been eating up free space and I cannot figure out where it's going. Oh, no. I had been working with about 20 plus gigs free space, which was pretty stable at that level until about 2 months ago. I use Clean My Mac to periodically clean up the junk, but once I get it back up to about 20 gigs free space, it is quickly eaten up, and it quickly eats up that free space until now I only have about 4.5 gigs free. I also did a macOS reinstall several months ago, and after that, I was back at 25 gigs of free space. Then the free space disappeared. I've looked for Time Machine backups, but didn't find any using the Time Machine utility tool, looking at the local snapshots, which that would have been one of my guesses. I've deleted unused apps, not very many, as I've got my system where I want it. I've run clean my Mac, but as of today, it only finds about 800K, and my free space is 4.89 gigs. As you can see, the storage shows apps using 495 gigs. This cannot be correct, and the system is not showing anything but calculating, while Mac hard drive window shows 4.87 gigs of free space. So what can I do? Install macOS again, nuke and pave, help.
Yeah, this is interesting. He sent us a screenshot of the system settings storage window that shows this, you know, applications taking up 495 gigs. And my next step would be to go into, you know, the applications folder and get the size of the applications folder to confirm that it's seeing the same thing. And if you truly do have 495 gigs in your applications folder, well, let's dig in deeper to that and see where that's being used up, right? You can, you could open that folder and, tell it, what is that? If you go into, I think it's show in Finder, show view options, calculate all sizes, and then sort by size, you know, from largest to smallest, and see what you've got in that applications folder. Like that, given what you've shown us here, that's the first thing I would do. Yep. I'm assuming when he says he runs Clean My Mac, he's talking about Space Lens inside Clean My Mac, which is really it's the amazing place I would go to. And I'd be curious what, I know it says that it only shows 600 or 800K to free up. I would do kind of the what I call the manual mode of Space Lens, where I just let it show me the folders on my Mac that have the most things used, and I dig in and I decide what I'm going to delete. And some of that comes with, you know, decades of making mistakes and deleting the wrong things and learning what I can and can't touch. But at least getting a feel for where this space is being used. The command that he mentioned, which I'll put in the show notes so we all have it, but the terminal TM command utility. to list all the snapshots is fine. I would use disk utility to see these now because it gives you a graphical view and you can delete from there. There might not be anything, that might not be the issue, but I would dig deeper with Space Lens and just with Finder and start looking at where things are being chewed up. That's kind of it. If I were there, what would I do next thing? What would you do next, if anything?
Well, different? I feel like you're onto something with the, I mean, he's mentioning specifically that it's calling out applications.
This is weird.
And so where my brain went is there are a lot of applications, and we've talked about these, that store their data in a library file, right?
Yep.
Within the application. So usually like a MySQLite database or something like that. I'm wondering if what's happening is he's freeing up the free space, and then there's one of these apps that in the background or when you're running it is pulling down data from the cloud and like storing it within that app. And it's like, oh, goody, I have a bunch more free space. Let me grab more cash. Let me grab more stuff. Let me grab more. You know, so I'm thinking about like podcasts that have auto downloads in the podcast app, right? I don't know that those necessarily show up. I don't know where those show up. Like that would be a culprit, or movies that are automatically downloaded in the background, or like, but it must be, if it's coming out of applications, my guess would be it is some app that he uses regularly. I'm thinking about like, this wouldn't eat up that much space, but like, for example, I use reader apps, and I know a lot of those store everything in a library file, and they usually have a setting that says, hey, pull everything down in the background, so when I'm offline, I can still like read all this stuff.
Yeah,
right.
Right. Right.
And it will just store that stuff inside a database in the app. Like it's within the app container. It's not out there on a, you know, in the Finder somewhere where the Finder is going to actually see it. It's going to see it. Oh, this app is, you know, it's like app and data stuff.
Yeah. Right. 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 Yeah. There's something doesn't add up. And I don't say that to be punny. Like something's not right.
Cause I would assume the only other thing that I would think of is, you know, like I know photos, but I mean, that would show that to you, right? Like I think photos, when you launch photos, will just use up whatever space, but like Apple then calls that, you know, like purgeable space. So it's like, It's not really eaten up, but it will just grab everything. I wish you could kind of set some sort of limit, but I know there's, you know, apps that sort of do that. And so I don't know. Is this actually, and the other question I would have is this actually causing a day-to-day problem? Like, is he getting messages that says he can't store stuff? Or is, again, this just the system doing its system stuff? And like, hey, I've got extra space. I'm going to use it all until you need it, and then I'll give it back to you.
That is perhaps the most valuable question of all. I mean, it's good to be proactive about this. If you've got something that's not being managed by the system that is chewing up available storage,
it would
be good. Yeah, exactly. And again, this one doesn't smell like an Apple thing. Like the fact that it's showing that his applications are the thing, something's not right here. And it might be the way Apple is calculating this stuff is giving an incorrect interpretation of it. I don't know. Right. So, yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Interesting, though. Interesting. I have some cool stuff found. I have some show and tell if you're watching the video, but if not,
awesome.
That's okay. I mentioned that I went to Pepcom. There was a company there. I don't know that I had heard their name before. INU, I think is how we spell it. They are making chargers and battery packs and all of this stuff. They have been doing this for a long time outside of the United States and have, you know, and are a, you know, top seller on Amazon with this stuff with ton of reviews. I love the kinds of things that they are doing and the price points that they are doing them at. Is kind of amazing to me. The thing I want to talk about today is this INIU. It's a 3-in-1 portable charging station that folds up kind of to the size of like a wallet. And you unfold it and it's got two halves. One half has a Qi pad on it for your, like a MagSafe, a magnetic pad for your phone. The other half has two pads. One is a Qi pad that's like for your AirPods, and then the other is a puck for your watch. And the puck can stand up if you've got a watch band that requires that. The foldability of this thing also allows you to stand the thing up so that your phone can be kind of in nightstand mode. And it's $30. So this is a 3-in-1 charger. Portable, and it's $30 on Amazon right now. There's a 15% coupon as of the moment that we are talking about this. So, like, the fact that there's a 3-in-1 thing that does your watch, does MagSafe, portable for less than, like, this is a, you know, less than $99 is outstanding. And I used this on Wednesday night in my hotel room so that I could talk about it here on the show, and it charged all three things. I had it do my watch, my AirPods, and my phone, and everything charged up. Like it all just worked, and I just plugged it in and good to go. So, yeah, pretty. I'm eager to see how this brand kind of makes its way into the U.S. market. So, yeah.
What's the just curious? What is the wattage charging speed? Is it? Is it fast charging, slow? I'm assuming it's slow charging.
It's 15 watts.
Which wouldn't be a big deal. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, again, not a big deal if you're traveling and just plugging it overnight.
Well,
or whatever.
Isn't 15 watts the fast charge? That is fast charging.
I thought you had to be like 29 or 30, right? Isn't it?
No, that 15 watts
fast
on
the, and fast, right?
Yeah, 15 watts on the MagSafe, I thought was fast, but
I don't.
Yeah, but maybe things can go faster than that now. I don't know. I thought the MagSafe was.
I thought they could
15, but yeah. Somebody will tell us, and I perhaps even before the end of the show. So, Yeah, I was stoked about this. And they also have charging banks. They were telling me something about how their battery technology allows them to make batteries that have it, for the same capacity of the battery, are physically smaller. And it's just something about the way their engineering works. And they did. They had, you know, like MagSafe battery packs that at least were rated the same as one that I had. And it was, you know, I would say 15% smaller. So it's interesting.
Yeah, Apple's charger is 20 watt, okay. Or the recommended charger for fast charging is 20 watts. Again, I don't know that there's a major,
right?
Again, like I don't get caught up in this stuff, to be honest with you, because like
I'm sleeping,
I throw it on the puck. Exactly. Like, yeah. I don't care if it charges in 30 minutes; it needs to be charged in, you know, 6 to 8 hours.
Like, right, right. It's gonna be okay.
I'm not panicking over this stuff.
It's gonna be all right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I also saw something that's sort of disgusting to talk about, but very necessary with all of us shoving things in our ears all the time. And I am someone who I joke that I spend half of my life with in-ear monitors in, but it's true. Like, I've had them in for the whole show. I will take a couple hours off, and then I have a rehearsal this afternoon, so they go back in. I have 2 gigs this weekend, so they'll be in for those. Like, you know, and then sometimes my AirPods are in, and so that it shoves all that earwax in. And cleaning our ears is a good thing. And I have for decades been, you know, someone who safely likes to keep my ears clean, needs to keep my ears clean. And I have tried out the camera wand things that, you know, you pair with your phone, and then you can stick a thing down in your ear and like scoop out the earwax. The problem with all of those that I have tried up until the other night is that as I spin the thing around in my ear, the perspective on my phone shifts and I'm completely lost as to what I'm doing. Like, I can see it in there and it's like, all right, there's that little bit of wax. I'm going to get out. And then I try to move my hand in the right direction, and it always goes in some cockeyed direction because my brain to hand connection with my eyes just doesn't work when the view keeps rotating on me. Well, B-Bird is making their ear vision cleaner, and they range from $45 would get you this thing. It pairs with your phone, and it has a gyroscope in it so that when you spin it, the camera view doesn't change. I knew the PR rep that was working with him, so he's like, can I see inside your ears? I'm like, yeah. And obviously he let me do it because you shouldn't, unless you're like a doctor, maybe have a lot of training, you shouldn't do this to other people. But so I did it to myself with a, you know, sterilized thing. And it was like, wait a minute, like I can do this standing here on a trade show floor. This is no problem. And I was able to just like scoop the stuff out. And of course there was a crowd of people that were like, now we get to see inside Dave's head, which was fun. But you know, it's amazing. This thing, it's the best one that I've tried, and I've tried a lot of these because I wind up shoving wax in my ears all the time. So I know you're laughing at me, Adam, and I think your siren is also going off.
That's what I'm laughing at. It's 10 a.m. on the first Friday of the month.
Of course it is. That's right. That's right. But yeah, the gyroscope in this thing makes all the difference in the world. And really, it's truly amazing. So, and for $45, you know, you can get a family kit and like the whole thing. But it starts at $46 is what it is on their website. $45.99 for the one with the intelligent gyroscope, which is the way you want to go, for sure. And then, like I said, there's others with more stuff and features, but this is the one you'd want. This is the one I want, and I'm happy it exists. So
very cool. I'd be afraid to use it, honestly.
I get that.
Damaging my ears.
No, that is the right way to approach using these things, in my opinion. You absolutely want that very healthy fear of damaging your ears. The good news with these things is you can see how far in your ear the thing is. So go slowly, be careful. And if you get to a point where you're like stuck, stop. That's my advice with this, but yeah, obviously, please don't damage your ears. Please,
yeah, it'd be
please.
My luck. That's the time the cat comes by and bumps my elbow.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm eager. I have not yet tested out, speaking of hearing health, I have not yet tested out Apple's new AirPods Pro feature that does that, but that like allows me to use them as, you know, they call it loud sound reduction or something. I call it active ear plugs, but it's my term, right? So
I could use that right now, as a matter of fact.
You could, yeah. I will say that those AirPods Pro Gen 2, which I wound up buying for myself recently just because I knew all these features were coming, and also my AirPods Pro Gen 1, as we mentioned, over the summer, kind of started to crap out on me. But those things, like the tech in them, it's really, it's amazing how fluid the experience is walking around in cities, being on the train, being, you know, the conversation of where this, the adaptive noise canceling, where you can put it in that mode where it sort of rides the wave of what's happening around you. It really kind of detaches me from the world while still keeping me connected where I need to be. They do a fantastic job with it. So,
yeah, I realized I get to try this out this weekend, because I'm actually, I never go to a concert, but I'm going to a concert this weekend, and I'm like, oh, I should bring, because I was, for whatever reason, I think somebody went on a plane or a trip or something like that, and they gave them those soft tip ear, you know, earplugs, and they were sitting on the counter when I was getting my coffee before the show, and I'm like, oh, yeah, we should have hearing protection when we go to this concert. And I'm like, oh, I could use my new AirPods Pro and try it out. So I think I'm actually going to do that and see how it works. But yeah, Bare Naked Ladies and Toad the Wet Sprocket.
Oh, that's going to be a great show. That's great. Love that. Yeah, those are two. Yeah. Have you seen either of those bands before?
I have seen Bare Naked Ladies before, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, they're a fun band.
San Diego.
Yep.
Yeah.
Toad is also a fun band live.
I've never seen them.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they toured together a couple of years ago too. And we wound up seeing both of those bands here in New Hampshire together. And yeah. Yeah. You're going to have a good time.
Yeah, very excited.
Yeah. Yeah. I, whenever I'm, well, not whenever I'm at concerts, but all the time, I have on my watch face is the decibel meter that, so it tells me what the ambient volume is. And, yep. So I'd be curious as to what the ambient volume is while the show's playing. I mean, you can do it with your phone. You can launch the app on your watch or whatever. But actually, maybe you can't do it with your phone. It's only built into the watch, I think. Yeah.
I don't know. I have that stuff. I have a Series 6 Apple Watch.
Yeah, then it'll do.
So I don't.
It would do that.
I might turn that on.
Yeah. I mean, you can just launch the. There's an app, too, that'll show you the noise level, but. Yeah, I'm curious. You know, most concerts hover between 91 and 95 is kind of where you'll probably find it. But I've been to, obviously, been to some shows where it's, you know, at 105. It's like, yeah, that's way more than
it
needs
to be. Well, you don't
want
any of those for that length of time.
Correct. Any of them. Right. That's right. Well, yeah, yes. However, it's not just that. It's the... You know, having 2 hours of 90 dB or 95 dB, not great for you. But if that's all you're getting, it is cumulative, right? So, I've talked to audio engineers, like front of house engineers, about this. Like, you know, do you mix a concert with earplugs in? And, like, is that the right way to do your job? Or do you need to hear what it actually sounds like without filters, et cetera, right? And... Right. I've talked to audiologists and front of house engineers, and generally speaking, a lot of these guys, including the ones that have been in the industry for decades and decades, most of them mix without earplugs in. However, as soon as the show is over and before the show starts, they have earplugs in to protect them from the noise of the crowd is often going to sit well above 80 dB, sometimes 85, like, and with house music on, you might even be at 90 dB without a band even playing, right? And so the idea for them is protect so that you can use your hearing during those moments. And you know, a lot of them, I just had Robert Scoville, who's like, he is the, you know, sort of A-list engineer. He just finished with Kenny Chesney's tour and just did iHeartRadio and Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Like, he's the first call guy for, you know, for a lot of these things. And he obviously cares about his hearing and talked to an audiologist, sees an audiologist regularly. And it's like, yeah, no, you're, you know, you've lost a little bit because he's, I mean, we all lose it because we age. It's sort of a byproduct of it. But otherwise, no, like his hearing's pretty good, but he's crazy. Like I went and saw him mix Chesney. And as soon as he had a earplugs like on the thing, he even leaned over and told me, he's like, look, I'm not going to be offended if you wear earplugs for the show. I'm like, I was like, Robert, I was I don't care about offending you on this one. I was definitely going to wear earplugs, aren't you? He's like, no, but you'll see. As soon as the show ends, I pop them in. It's like, okay, all right, interesting. So, yeah.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just, so it's, I already more, have mild.
It's more, it, there's more to it than just the, you know, limited exposure. That being said, please protect your hearing anytime you are able with loud music, yeah, and loud sounds. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I already have mild hearing loss and tinnitus, so I don't need things to get worse.
Right. Yep. Yeah. All right. We got to get out of here, Adam. The bell already went off. All the things happened. Thanks for hanging out with us, folks. Thank you for sending in all your questions. Thanks to all of, and tips and cool stuff found and all that stuff. Thanks to all of our premium listeners. Thanks to Cashfly for providing all the bandwidth to get the show from the audio version of the show anyway, from us to you. I don't know what else to say. Maybe we'll just have a moment of just music here. Wait.
Feedback at MacGeekGab.com if people want to send in on any of that stuff, right?
Feedback at MacGeekGab.com. Love that. Have a good week. Have fun. And don't get caught.
Made on a Mac.
Later.